Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Marcellus, come up in that chair a little bit. You're a little too low. No. Coming up, I'll tell you why there might actually be a method to Jerry Jones's madness.
And I've got another installment of the Emmy Award-winning That Dude's Dudes. But we start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got today, dude?
Oh, all right, Marcellus. You know I'm old school. And I believe I told you last week, one of my favorite rap groups of all time was EPMD.
E-double.
Eric and Parrish Making Dollars. All of their albums reference business. Strictly Business, Unfinished Business, Business as Usual, Business Never Personal. Mm. Today I'm wondering if Le'Veon Bell and his agent, Adisa Bakari, have ever even heard of EPMD because they've allowed this business with the Pittsburgh Steelers to become way too personal. They gots to chill. Bell skipping this entire season may go down in history as one of the dumbest decisions in sports negotiation of contracts ever. By not reporting yesterday, Bell and his agent gave Pittsburgh absolutely all the leverage. The Steelers, if they choose, can now retain Bell's rights next season by slapping a transition tag on him. They'd owe him between $9.5 and $14.5 million. They could use the transition tag as leverage to force a trade and get some compensation for Bell's departure. Had Bell simply reported on Tuesday and finished out this season, he would have automatically been an unrestricted free agent. This coming offseason, his path to auctioning himself off to the highest bidder would have been clear-cut. Now he's dependent on the goodwill of the Steelers to cut him or some creative poison pills loaded into his next contract. The process to getting out of Pittsburgh now includes racializing the conversation around Bell. 3 weeks ago in a story for The Undefeated, Adisa Bakari played the first race card, saying, quote, "Now my analysis of things certainly is shaped by the unique history of African Americans. My analysis of the economics of the NFL certainly are shaped by the historical experience of black athletes and the mistreatment of black athletes. So that history is interwoven in my thought process, of course." And yesterday, as it became clear that Bell would sit, the social justice warrior media picked up Bakari's dog whistle. Mm. The NFL Network's Jim Trotter wrote, "There's a racial component to the lack of support Bell is receiving from fans." Bleacher Report's Mike Freeman analogized Bell's plight to Colin Kaepernick and suggested some NFL owners will collude to keep Bell out of the league. Yep. Right before our very eyes, Bell is being turned into a victim of the racist NFL. Bell isn't the second coming of John Riggins, the white Hall of Fame running back who sat out the entire 1980 season in a contract dispute with the Redskins. Nope. Bell is Kunta Kinte, and the NFL is attempting to chop off his foot. Mm. Look, life is full of hard decisions. Sometimes we're a victim of our own bad decision-making and an unwillingness to sacrifice. The NFL free agency rules are spelled out rather clearly. Report and do the 6 games were Bell's path to unrestricted free agency. Bell shouldn't allow mouthy Steelers offensive lineman or James Conner's success to distract him from his business agenda. In my opinion, ego and pride have clouded Bell's decision-making. He's made a checkers move in a game of chess. His free agency fate is now outside his control, and he's lost millions of dollars he'll never recoup. Blame Bell and his agent for not keeping this negotiation strictly business. All right, joining the desk now, Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings and the NFL Network's Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, start with you.
Yeah.
I believe Bell will regret the way he's handled these contract negotiations.
I don't think so. If you go back to what he's standing on in principle, we have to respect the two principles of this world. One is principle with the AL, which is talking about the money, and one is with the LE, which is talking about what you believe in. And I think that his belief in not only his value, his worth, but also the fact that they were trying to use up all of his bullets and not pay proper value for them is why I think this man standing on principle LE is going to make sure that the AL doesn't have to match what everyone is saying. What are they saying? 5 years, $70 million. How dare you turn that down? What are they saying? Oh, 1 year, $14.55 million. How dare you turn that down? But when you want to talk about what's important to someone, it's difficult to get in that conversation and speak for them. money doesn't cure all ills. You know that when you get some money. You don't know that when you don't have any money. When you're growing up broke, you think money solves all problems. And he's in a place where he has some money, but he knows what he deserves and what he should be allowed to attain. I respect the man who's going to combine those two forces of AL and LE in principle and goes out there and does his job. He's going to get rewarded. We know that. And he may not even get the exact numbers that some think he should in projection, but it doesn't matter because I think that he's done something of this generation in pioneering a new belief in yourself, no matter what position you play on that field.
I think what Le'Veon Bell did is he understood exactly how the game was going to be played. When I worked in front offices, our objective was to take running backs high, put them on a five-year deal, run them into the ground, at the end of year four, draft another one, and at the end of his fifth year, let the running back go. Le'Veon Bell played at bargain basement prices for the Pittsburgh Steelers for four seasons before they put the tag on him. They were going to put the tag on him again. When we look at the numbers, he has the second most touches of anybody from 2013 to 2017. He's played the most snaps of anybody at the running back position during that same span. To think that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to put him on the franchise tag, they were going to ride him out this year, give him 400 touches, and then next year they were going to give him a big deal? Nah, player.
That's not the argument, though.
So what he decided to do is, and we do the economics, he could have taken two franchise tags. The Pittsburgh Steelers were guaranteeing $17 million. That's great for 1 year. However, if he played on the tag and played on the tag again next year, he was going to get $33 million. So the contract negotiation has to start at that point. The Pittsburgh Steelers are a model franchise, but the way they do contracts, they do practical guarantees, not real guarantees. They only give you their money that first year they don't do it. So for him, he's like, I can get the money if I sit on the franchise tag 2 years. Just guarantee me that amount, and I'll show up. They refuse to. Got to do business.
Mm-hmm. You're arguing something, though. Look, I understood why he held out. He was not getting his value. I'm saying show up so you can become an unrestricted free agent and auction yourself off to the highest bidder where you don't have to concern yourself about what the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to do. Again, they can put this transition tag on him. Show up, do your business, and get your freedom in six games or seven games or whatever if they make it to the playoffs.
I hear you, but I don't think that this was a dumb decision by Le'Veon Bell in any regard, simply because he puts himself at risk once he reports. Practicing, possibly getting injured, it puts yourself at risk. He's thinking in the back of his mind, look at what happened to Earl Thomas. I understand it was earlier in the year, but the longer you wait, we all understand this. The longer you're out of that game, you can't imitate that with your workouts, your catered workouts and customized workouts to you. So I put myself back in that position. They say, oh, let's put him on the field. Something happens. Now his stock plummets even more. So I would just pause and take the hit. He understands I am taking a hit. But high risk, high reward. And I think there is somebody, and he knows it, that is going to bite because he is a big fish if you land him.
Yeah, here's the problem. It's not just the injury scope, and I think we've all talked about that ad nauseum. It's when you ever been on the field with a coach in any situation and there's conflicting interests. You had a problem with coach during the week. It could get petty, and you need that coach to be on board with you. But in this moment or in these few games, maybe he's not fully on board with you. He's of split mind. James Conner is our future, but you're our short-term rental present. Does coach invest in me? Does coach call the plays for me? Does coach put me in the perfect positions to succeed? Beyond injury, beyond the danger of the game, is are we pulling in the same direction, Pittsburgh Steelers? And I've been there before when you're on that fence with coach, and it's just like he's rooting for you, but there's someone upstairs saying, hey, Wiley's a big cap hit. Wiley's a big mouth in the locker room. It'd be easier to go with that cheaper, lesser value, even if we lose some production. Don't forget the politics of the game at play, and no one wants to raise their hand and volunteer to walk into that arena when you know not everyone's on board with you.
Y'all have made some good points. I think I want to move to a second layer of this before we go. I think this analogy that's being made to Colin Kaepernick is ridiculous. Because for what Greg has said, he's going to get his money. Somebody's gonna pay. His talent is so enormous, several teams will be in competition for Le'Veon Bell. There is no analogy here to me to Colin Kaepernick. There's no reason to be playing a race card here in this situation with Le'Veon Bell.
I don't think it's a race thing. I think the bigger issue that I have when I go back and forth with people on Twitter has been just evaluation of the running back position. I believe people think that running backs are a dime a dozen, and I think for so long in our league, people are willing to pay the position, not the player. I believe we need to value the good players and pay them accordingly. Just because he plays running back, this dude is one of the top 10, top 15 players in the National Football League. He deserves to be paid like that. And so I know fantasy football has impacted us, and we look at everybody like the numbers are the same. But when I talk to people and I talk to defensive coordinators, they say, man, the Pittsburgh Steelers just got a whole lot easier to beat in the playoffs because they don't have 26 on the field.
Well, I disagree with that. I push back because, look, we all grew up in an era where at 8 years old, when you went out to that park and signed up and $65 in registration money and selling candy, mama said, what you gonna play? You said, running back. I mean, I know I raised my hand. Anybody with any type of speed, any type of athleticism wanted to play running back. And then you got to the league, and it still was a position of value. But it's devolved. It has certainly went the other way in terms of value, in terms of even impact. You have to be a running back that's a dual threat. You just can't be out there. There was a day where you could be running back and didn't even have to pass protect. Mm-hmm. Then they were like, you have to learn how to pass protect. Now it's like, you have to learn how to catch the ball out the backfield. Le'Veon Bell does all of that. However, the running back position has lost its value in totality, and that's just tough luck. I mean, look, there was a day when if you had a kid that was 6'10 or above, oh, my God, turn his back to the basket, let him play center. How has that worked out for that kid right now in today's NBA? They're trying to get them out of there. So today's center in basketball is today's running back in football. Value is determined by how the game is being played, and it's been playing different at that position.
The only thing I'll say to go back at that is Todd Gurley. What are your feelings on Todd Gurley? What is his impact on the Rams? When you look at Saquon Barkley and what he's been able to do coming off the field, Christian McCaffrey. So I understand when we talk about running backs and how the game is being played differently. Le'Veon Bell is a hybrid. When he talked about being a RB1 and a wide receiver 2, he is that. I think those guys are the ones that deserve to be paid.
And for me, that's what's most important. The running back position as a whole, it may be devalued, but what these guys that you just mentioned provide, that's not devalued. That is of value, high value at that. We see because Ty Gurley's getting paid. Look at Alvin Kamara. You think somebody's not going to pay him? No, yes, they will. And so what Le'Veon Bell provides, it's not even remotely close to a Colin Kaepernick situation. Mm.
Thank you for going there, because I was just about to go back to Bucky and Marcellus have danced on me.
Oh, we
danced on you?
Gangsters don't dance, we boogie.
Well, y'all done boogied on me. This Colin Kaepernick and trying to turn this into some sort of racial conversation is inappropriate and stupid here. Le'Veon Bell is going to get paid. No one questions how his talent or value. There's damn near any owner in the league would love to have Le'Veon Bell.
Look, this is an impossible parallel, Kaepernick and Le'Veon Bell, for many reasons. One, they are already starting off in different places, but at the same time, you can see commonality. Here we go. Colin Kaepernick, first day he protested, no one even took notice. Okay, Colin Kaepernick is continuing to protest. Now we take notice. The outcome of the protest, no one knew in that moment. You're looking at Le'Veon Bell right now, and he has finally made his ultimate protest. I'm not coming in. We don't know what's going to happen with him in terms of contract situation. We're thinking there's going to be light at the end of the tunnel. We didn't know that Colin Kaepernick was going to have opportunities or not opportunities. He had opportunities to stay with the 49ers. He had opportunity to go to Denver. I'm just saying right now, to make it analogous to Colin Kaepernick, to me, is lazy, because I don't even see all the parallels there.
Yeah, I don't see the parallels. I don't think it would be blackballed. I don't think it would be a situation where people will look at his situation in Pittsburgh and say, oh, we can't bring him in. I think at the end of the day, people love performance and production. He can perform. He can produce. He'll get paid. I don't think that would be an issue. It only takes one. It only takes one to fall in love with him.
But
I think he'll find more than one.
Bucky, be real, though. They don't love production in an absolute sense.
No.
Okay, right. Because how many times we've been in the locker room, we're like, why isn't he starting over him? Oh, why isn't this guy on our team if he's available? And look, Colin Kaepernick fell into that boat. I have never proclaimed that the NFL, every team was about the 53 best mm-hmm. men they could mm-hmm. acquire or the 11 best on the field. Look, Kaepernick has a value as a player to a point where he should be in the locker room, but then you add up everything else that comes with that player, obviously that keeps you out the locker room. Le'Veon, you add up everything about him, suspensions, issues, everything, still going to be in somebody's locker room.
I just think it's Le'Veon Bell's one of the best players in the mm-hmm. NFL.
Yeah. He's
probably top 20. Mm-hmm. Kaepernick's not anywhere close to the top 20. It's a dumb analogy.
Ever wonder how to get the hottest new sneakers, the ones that barely hit shelves? The answer is StockX, a revolutionary new marketplace for buying and selling 100% authentic sneakers, streetwear, watches, and handbags. Millions are already using StockX to find everything after it sells out. From the latest Yeezys to every retro Jordan to the hottest new streetwear from brands like Supreme, Bape, Palace, and Kith. StockX even allows users to buy and sell pre-owned, excellent condition luxury handbags and watches from brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Gucci, Rolex, Omega, Tudor, and more. StockX gives you access to tons of historical price data so you can see exactly how much an item has sold for in the past and how much it's selling for now. Best of all, StockX has removed all the risk from buying and selling online. They provide total anonymity between buyer and seller. StockX is in the middle, so you never have to deal with a random buyer or seller again. And they have experts who verify every item, making sure everything you buy is 100% authentic. Never get burned by fakes again. Go to StockX.com/speak. StockX, now you know.
All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings. Marcellus, start with me. I saw nothing last night other than the Cowboys defense that impressed me. Nothing that made me believe Cowboys are going to get it together this year.
Well, I just saw your face on Jerry Jones. You're talking about the Grim Reaper right there. With your face on Jerry Body? Oh, my goodness. I absolutely agree with you. Delusional. If you went to bed last night in a zero-sum game of football where every day you're going through the process, whether it's practice or a game, coach says, do you get better or did you get worse? And I'm looking at this team, even though they got a win, I feel worse about this team in terms of confidence because this was an underachieving Dak Prescott, even though this was a still good game for him based on his standards. It brings me back to the old adage that war can't be avoided, just postponed. Jerry Jones has a war on his hands, and it's with his head coach and Jason Garrett, and it's with his star quarterback, Dak Prescott. You're just trying to postpone the inevitable, which is you got an average coach who can control a locker room, who I think is he should be in priority over Dak Prescott, who no matter what you throw at him, no matter what you give him, you're going to still go out there and see a performance like that. Like you said, his processor. Why are you taking these sacks? You see him in great field position. Why aren't you continuing to move the chains? And you see a running game where you're like, continue to ride that guy. It's 8 yards a carry. All those things add up to me to say that this Dallas Cowboys team doesn't know which way is up, and I don't think they ever figure it out with those two as key principles.
Yeah, for me, it didn't give me more confidence in the Garrett Prescott era moving forward. But I don't think that Jerry Jones is delusional. I think he's just being unrealistic. When you look at the National Football League right now, you can't win with the type of play that Dak Prescott has put on the football field unless your defense plays completely lights out week in and week out.
Right.
And Ezekiel Elliott does what he did last night every single game for here on out. And in my opinion, that's unrealistic. When you look at the rest of their remaining schedule, when you got to compete against Kansas City, the Rams, the Steelers, the Saints, all these high-scoring profile offenses, and you have a quarterback that has a weapon now in Amari Cooper, we've seen it, but can't really get them the ball, I'm not realistic. I think it's unrealistic.
My thing is this. When you look at Jerry Jones, I don't think he wants a different coach in there. And I asked this question on the show, on our kickoff show. You think Jerry Jones, if you told him, hey, you know what, you can have a Super Bowl team if you get out of the way. If you stop doing your radio show, you don't be the GM, and you get out of the way, would you want a Super Bowl? Would you take it? I don't think he would, because this is I don't think he's dumb. He knows what he's doing. This guy's been around a long time. I believe that he wants to, he can't have another coach come in there. Jason Garrett, who is he going to get that's going to come in and let him act the way he acts? Who's going to deal with that? These coaches, it doesn't work. He tried it with Parcells, and it didn't work.
Well, hold on. I want to be clear on how Jerry acts. To me, and Jerry's the GM, he's making the decisions, or his son is, whomever, they built a solid defense.
Yeah, but
you
got to
give him credit for that.
And offense.
They built a solid offensive line, great running back. I like the Amari Cooper move right now.
Yep.
Jerry's giving him the pieces. He's got a blind spot when it comes to this coach, and particularly when it comes to this quarterback.
But why does he have a blind spot when it comes to this coach? Well, that is my thing. I'm saying because I'm thinking if a good coach comes in there, he's going to have to get out of the way. My thing is this. I don't think Jerry wants to get out of the way. And this is what Starbuck is saying, I think. And Troy Aikman is saying that something's dysfunctional. That is the dysfunctional piece to me because they got the players. They got everything you need because he's good at that. But can he get out of the way?
Not the first time we've seen this. No shots at Kobe Bryant, but there was a moment of truth for Kobe Bryant in his young career, him and Shaq having their issues. And I remember hearing the statement, do you want to win or do you want to be the reason we win? And there's a subtle difference. Like, do you just care if we win, no matter who gets the love, who gets the accolade, or you want it to come through you in a winning effort? And it seems like Jerry Jones has chose that I want to be the reason we win because he went through winning 3 or 4 Super Bowls with Jimmy Johnson. And Jimmy Johnson said, this is perfect. You won 2 with Jimmy. And Jimmy's like, this is perfect. And Jerry's like, it'd be better if you said my name. It'd be better if you give me some credit. It'd be better if you just respect the other name on the check. And Jimmy was like, man, let me just be a football coach and let you be an owner. And that was a point of contention. And I still think that he is living in that mental space. Like, I have to be part of this reason, a large part of us winning.
Listen, y'all are beating up on Jerry a lot, and maybe he deserves it. But I was listening to that game, and a lot of times you can pick up through the broadcasters what the conversation is in the building. Mm. Because the broadcasters get all this access
beforehand.
They have the production meetings. And so I listened to Chris Collinsworth's commentary last night.
Come on.
And to me, there's a dispute right now between the coaching staff and Jerry Jones about the quarterback. If you listen to Chris Collinsworth last night, he consistently pointed out, can't take that sack. You got to get rid of the ball. Oh, when they go back and look at this film and he missed this guy wide open, he's going to regret that. And so all last night, I thought fairly, not he wasn't unfair at all, Chris Collinsworth was pointing out the shortcomings in the quarterback. And at one point he said, you know, Scott Linehan has said, if we could just get rid of the ball and just line up on second down rather than taking this sack.
Jason, I 100% agree with you. There was one moment in that game where Chris Collinsworth went back, like probably another series, a series prior, when Dak Prescott had Michael Gallup, the young rookie, and he threw it to him, and then he got pushed out of bounds by Corey Graham.
Yes.
He sat and waited and waited, and he's like, this is what they're talking about. When you hear a broadcaster saying this is what they're talking, he's not just talking about what he sees. He sat down with these coaches, and they have an expectation that they have for Dak Prescott and that he has for himself, and he's not meeting that, and there is some tension there, I believe.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, we pointed this out when Tony Romo had to do to the game, and it was an impossible situation for Romo because, obviously, he's the former franchise quarterback. And he did it respectfully, but he kept saying, you got to hit him right there. The processor right now, you have to see these reads. And I think that anyone who's watching the game of football played at such a high level, whether you're young or old, from Tom Brady to Patrick Mahomes, it's easy to now look at a Dak Prescott and be like, that can't just be play calling. That is your issue and undermining you. It has to be a lot on you.
I think there's room for both. I think right now what my argument is, neither one of these guys are good enough. I think what Jerry's dealing with and what he's trying to postpone is he knows, and again, when Troy Aikman made the comment about dysfunction, the dysfunction is a coaching staff that, this is my speculation, doesn't believe in this quarterback. Jerry is insisting that they believe in this quarterback and is saying, no, put him in a better position. We'll give him Amari Cooper, call better plays, use him in the running game. And so they cleaned all of that up last night. They used him in the running game. I thought they used Amari Cooper effectively. But Jason Garrett still mismanaged the clock, in my opinion, and still – a few times I thought Chris pointed out, I was like, what are the routes are these receivers running? You know, have they given up on the play? But Jerry's trying to postpone a very difficult decision. Ownership and management go through this all the time. Who is it? The personnel? Is it the players? Jerry right now believes, I think, that it's on the coaches. If I had to choose one, I would fix the coaches first, because I don't trust this coaching staff to coach whoever they put in there.
Well, a lot of implicit bias is being exuded from this coaching staff. You ever been in a situation where you want to succeed, but because who you're working with, you're like, they are not up to par? You start pulling against yourself. You start rooting for yourself and yourself only. And I think that's what's happening to this coaching staff, not consciously, that they're saying, I want this to be exposed because we're taking heat for that. I wouldn't doubt that these coaches are saying, well, let's see you go out there and win the game, when that's not the way that they want to approach it, but they're rooting for themselves, and they're starting to realize we can't achieve it with you at the quarterback.
Well, you know, and I think about this, if Matt Nagy was coaching this team, if Andy Reid, if Sean Payton was there, how would this offense look? And what about the quarterback? If Patrick Mahomes was with this team, how would this offense be putting up points? Would it be able to be done differently? And maybe Jason Garrett is saying that. Like, I don't know. I can't do it with this guy, Dak. I've said it before here, and I've said it on the show. Dak hasn't impressed me. I mean, he's gotten consistently worse since his rookie year. Is he a franchise quarterback for $25 million or with one of those big deals? I don't think so. This is one of the worst things that can happen to you, is you get a quarterback who's just okay.
Yeah.
Because now you're stuck to him. Do they really want to? I think Jerry's old. Okay, he wants another crack. He wants another Super Bowl, and you got to be looking at that window. It's closing. There's no doubt about that. I don't wish that on him. But he's like, I need to win a Super Bowl, and I want to win it now so I can enjoy it. Can I do it with this kid? I think I can, and I think that's the problem.
But I also think I'm going to defend Jerry in this regard. I think he kind of wants to be innovative here. Everybody else is investing $30 million in a quarterback. Jerry wants to invest $15 million. And put all the other pieces around, build a complete team. He's damn near got a complete team right now, and he wants to invest $15 million in the quarterback and have all the other pieces around it good enough that they can compete for a Super Bowl. The coaching staff is sitting there saying they want it to be easy. Again, because Aaron Rodgers and some of these other quarterbacks make plays off script. You call the wrong play, they make it right with their ability to be a playmaker. Dak can't do any of that. And that, again, is why I say, Jerry, if you want to stick with this quarterback and you want a $15 million a year quarterback, you better have a $10 million a year head coach.
Well, that's why Jerry Jones has been negotiating in the public with Dak Prescott since week two.
No leverage, Marcelo.
And that's why he keeps saying, I love that. I love you when you're down, because you're going to be down in these negotiations when we get into that room and close that door. He's negotiating with Dak right now. Hometown discount, that is your ceiling right now. And Dak is probably going to take the bait, because he's like, Jerry's there for me. And with that star on your helmet, being the guy who had it on his helmet for, $15 million is base salary. The perks, the love, the accolade, the reverence, that is another level to that salary.
I don't think it's a bad strategy, though. I really don't.
I don't think it's a bad strategy if what they did last night is sustainable. And I just don't know if it is. It has to be sustainable for this to work, because in year one, the reason why Dak Prescott was so successful was because of the running game. Their defense wasn't nearly as good as it is right now, but their running game and how effective they were with Jason Witten and even Dez Bryant, these guys made it. The number one point that we missed, Tony Romo was on that sideline. Every time he had a situation, Dak being that he couldn't manage or he had to face or a situation that he had never seen, he could walk to the sideline and had an actual quarterback coach that played every situation and had experienced everything right there at his disposal. He doesn't have that anymore, so he's doing it on his own.
Time for some big stories. Whitlock and Wiley, Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings are back. Let's return to Philadelphia, where the Eagles Super Bowl hangover continued last night with a loss to the Cowboys that put any hopes of the playoffs in serious doubt. The Eagles have now lost three straight at home, with the offense again struggling to put up points last night. After the game, Carson Wentz didn't hide his feelings about the loss.
I know this one hurt. You know, this one hurt. Obviously, Sunday Night Football, divisional opponent, the Cowboys coming into our home. Really, the way we've played the last couple times at home, you know, that's not what we pride ourselves on, and this one hurt.
Yeah, I think the Eagles are figuring out how tough it is to repeat and defend the title. You get everyone's best shot. They started the season out and the offseason very arrogant. They had rediscovered football and were going to show the Patriots, you can have fun and you can win. And they were calling everybody out. And they're getting served a big heaping helping of humble pie, and that's what football would do. I think they're done.
Yeah, I don't think they're done. To your point, I think this is maybe what the doctor ordered, and this might be perfect timing, a place where they thrived last year when no one respected them, to the tune of them going to the Super Bowl in dog masks because we're the underdog, right? Well, right now, they've put themselves, unfortunately, in that position once again, and maybe they can climb up out of that hole. But this is an interesting team. As a defender, we used to always say, make them march down the field. Most teams cannot consistently move the chains and still hit pay dirt and score on that same drive. It's just numbers and facts. So this is a 20-20 team. Between the 20s, they'll put up all the empty calorie yardage and numbers, and Carson Wentz is having a better season this year by the numbers than he did last year in the MVP conversation. But they don't put up points, especially at home. They haven't scored more than 21 points at home this year. It's crazy to watch this team, but are they done? No. In the NFC East? No. You lost to the Dallas Cowboys, who caught you when you don't play your best ball at home right now. Things can get corrected in the second half of the season. I expect them.
Yeah, I'm not going to write them off yet, but they are definitely not the team that we saw out there last year, obviously. I think that goes without saying. Success is hard. Success is, I've seen it. Guy, individual success, team success. When you come back that next year, Michael Strahan said it the best. When you win the Super Bowl, the next year everybody thinks the reason we won is because of me. And so they show up with that, and that becomes intoxicating. Guys, you know, they drive Jeeps the year before. All of a sudden, they show up in the Mercedes. You know, they're wearing, they go from wearing sweats to wearing, Versace now. I got my boots on, my hat sideways, and it catches up to you. And it's intoxicating. We've all had success. It's easier when you fail and you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, we got to get better than this, than it is to say, okay, we got success with Super Bowl champs. You just lose that hunger. I think that's human nature. And I think that's what's going on here. It starts with the head coach. You know, he wrote that book. It starts with that organization. Let's not celebrate too hard, because if we want to go out there and get it done again, right now it's not happening. Maybe this loss in front of the national stage can flip that switch, because they got the talent. They got players. Definitely. And they can turn it around. It's not over yet.
I don't think that the Super Bowl hangover, I'm not a fan of that whole ordeal. I don't think it's a thing. But the Philadelphia Eagles are done. They are flat out done. Next week, they got the Saints. Down in New Orleans, they got the Giants, which is the one of
a bye.
Which is one of two of their last remaining losing teams. The Dallas Cowboys being the second. And they have they have the Redskins, the Rams, and the Saints, mind you, is in New Orleans. The Rams is out here. You got to go again to Washington. I just don't see them they have to win out, basically. They're already two games behind. I just don't see them pulling this out, especially if they lose next week. It's over. They walked into this season on crutches with their quarterback being out, Alshon Jeffrey being out, a lot of injury-riddled guys on the defense still lingering. I don't see them pulling this out.
Doug Peterson has the biggest ego in coaching right now.
I thought you said Hugh Jackson did, or he just got fired.
Hugh Jackson's not in football. So Doug Peterson's ego is maybe even bigger than Hugh Jackson, because when he had the success,
right,
he won the Super Bowl. And if you remember all the things we celebrate, oh, man, he's so aggressive, and he's turned the league around. Now everybody goes for it on fourth and one. And Doug Peterson, everybody wants to be like Doug Peterson. Football is a game for conservative people, conservative coaching. It's a game of field position, back and forth. The guy that's why Marty Schottenheimer won so many regular season games. Chuck Knox used to win regular season games. The guy that plays the field position game. This year, Doug Peterson's hyper-aggressive. It's biting him in the rear end. Last night, they were down 3-0, had a chance to kick a field goal at the 20-yard line. Oh, we're going to go for it, fourth and one. That's what we do. They get stopped. End of the first half, super aggressive. Let's call a timeout. Let's get the ball back, blah, blah, blah. Blew up in their face. All that hyper-aggressive stuff that they rolled last year, it's like being hot on a craps table. I've been there.
I see.
The tide will turn. Mm-hmm. If you stay too long and don't play the percentages, the tide will turn. That's what's happened to this team. Doug Peterson's arrogance, hyper-aggressiveness, pervasive throughout that team, the arrogance, the aggressiveness with their comments and the whole nine yards. Let's bring in Michael Bennett. Let's say everybody. It's blowing up in their face.
To that point, I get you. You got to play it by the book when you're in Vegas. The house wins because they respect
Ride your
the
hot streak, yeah. But know when it's over.
Yeah. See, I double down on 12 and split them. And people are like, what are you doing? I win some and I lose more. Yeah. I get it. But here's some numbers that support that it's beyond mindset. Let's just be real. 29th in starting field position. Why does that come up? The teams behind them are the Giants, the Browns, yuck, and then the Steelers, who have a tremendous offense and they're playing well. You look at them with the slow starts this year, Carson Wentz included. The sack numbers this year, much more than last year. In 7 games, 23 times he's been sacked. Last year, all of last year, 13 games for Carson Wentz, only 28 times. O-line's not the same. Jason Peters has gotten old. He has aged 10 years in the last 2 years because of injuries. So I just look at that as a collective, and what you said, a little of the mojo is gone, in part because the mindset has shifted from last year.
Well, momentum, there's nothing like momentum. I'm telling you, when you can get growing, we bet on these teams. When you get rolling, when that momentum stops, people start to doubt themselves. Jason Peters, another one. I got my Super Bowl ring.
I'm done now.
I'm rich. I don't have to work as hard as I used to. It shows up. I don't care what anybody says. It's intoxicating. Success is tough to deal with.
You heard that? It shows up.
It shows up. It's psychology. It's not just me saying this. This is what psychology says.
I mean, you're talking to somebody who went 15-1 after winning the Super Bowl. With the lockout.
Hold on.
Mind
but
you.
Y'all lost?
We did
lose. Okay?
I mean, we did lose. I mean, you want us. You want it. So everybody has
That's
to repeat.
Who, no, I didn't say repeat because you went a game after you go 15-1 and y'all have 15 guys on IR the year before. Y'all were loaded. What happened?
We lost.
How?
A team came in and beat us. it happens. it happens. When you look at this Philadelphia team, we underestimate the importance of a Frank Wright, of even the quarterback coach when you're dealing with a young quarterback. Carson Wentz, this is his third year, and we're saying, hey, you have the keys to the vehicle. You drive it. Yeah, but he was able to drive it with some guys in the passenger seat that he trusted that could alert him of what was ahead. He doesn't have that anymore. Yeah. Doug Peterson is that only guy that he has now.
It's important.
Football to me is like a spouse or whatever. The moment you feel like, oh, I got him figured out, they're going to throw you a curveball. I'm like, oh, damn, I never seen that before.
How you going to speak on that?
I was going to say, I didn't know you was married.
Where'd that come from? You guessing?
No, I'm not guessing. I just feel like I've had some people figure it out. They throw a curveball. All right, welcome back to the show, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Donte Jones. Let's move to the NBA. Where the Carmelo Anthony experiment in Houston appears to be coming to an end. While the team has denied reports they are planning to waive him, Melo missed the last two Rockets games with an undisclosed illness, and reportedly Melo's teammates believe he has played his final game with the team. Yesterday, Chris Paul was asked about the situation.
Melo has been great here, you know what I mean? That's like a brother to me, you know what I mean? So I don't know what's being said or whatnot, but Melo has been great, working hard every day, you know what I mean? So we'll see what happens.
He can be part of helping put this team in the right direction.
Man, Melo is a future Hall of Famer, you know what I mean? And that's me saying that, and that's knowing that. So like I said, we'll see what happens.
Love the has been great. I think that was the key word there in Chris Paul's comments. Melo's done.
In the NBA?
In Houston. Oh. He's done in Houston, and his legacy is taking a ding, as I tried to tell you last week. He's, again, loser. When you think of Melo, and I'm not calling him a loser, but people will think of him and his inability to win anything in the NBA. It will not, he's got a little Dwight Howard tends to him. People don't want him, don't think he's a part of a winning equation. One of your best friends, Chris Paul, basically is letting you go there in Houston.
You put that on Chris?
Well, he's one of, if he wanted to stand up, you see Dwayne Wade all over Twitter, everybody caping up for Melo. I didn't see no cape on Chris Paul's back.
He just
has
said it.
Been great. Has been.
Yes, like.
Has been.
Like, with us, he has been great.
Has been.
Like, look how you try to just butcher the English language.
Has been, that's what he said. He said
yeah, but he was talking about for us.
For us,
right. Like the has not in the past of another team and him being on their roster, but with us. Look, for those people who are saying it's things like you're saying, he's a loser, taking shots at Carmelo. Grandma always said, can't make sense out of nonsense. And that sense, that's nonsense. People are that lost in the NBA world that you don't respect this guy for what he has done as a collective. I think now this is going to make him a sympathetic figure to those same knuckleheads who think that Carmelo has not contributed tremendously to the game of basketball and in winning fashions. Look, I understand team record is one thing we're going to always throw that on Carmelo's legacy, but it's very unfortunate when you look at a guy like this who I think right now is being scapegoated to the tune of Dwayne Wade, like you said, going out there and saying, hey, man, y'all just going to put all this trying to make my guy Carmelo Anthony the fall guy, huh? Man, y'all need to stop. That's the easy way out instead of addressing what the real problem is. And now I go to Dante. Please tell us what's
going on. So we didn't say the same thing for Dwayne Wade last year with his experiment with Chicago and Cleveland, because it's not going to take a ding on his legacy because he went back to Miami and now everything is all good with Dwayne Wade right now. Him and Carmelo Anthony are both going to be first ballot Hall of Famers. Yes, small setbacks in your career do not favor well, and sometimes people tend to be in that moment and take that for granted. Dante. But Melo is one of the best scorers of all time.
Say that.
He's a great teammate because he's been one of my teammates. And right. He is an example. Those two situations for both players are the example of how fit works in the NBA. Not everybody works on every team. Case in point, Melo, D-Wade. If you put Steph Curry on every team, he's not going to work on every team.
How can you keep talking about D-Wade? The man single-handedly won a title in Miami. He won two other titles.
Single-handedly?
Single-handedly.
Dwayne Wade did that?
Shaq on his back and everybody. Oh, I was
man,
there.
The most powerful force of all time. He carried Shaq?
Absolutely.
For a series maybe, but not for a year. You're out of control. For seven games, yes, you can carry somebody for seven games.
You can't put Melo on the same platform as Dwayne Wade.
But you still had to prepare for Shaquille O'Neal every game for what, 25 and 15 or 30 and 15? Yeah, he still was number one on the scouting report. Did Dwayne Wade have great games? Yes, but he was a great number two to Shaq.
You can't put Wade, who was always has been a better player than Carmelo Anthony, was a real contender for MVP.
I'm not comparing the two.
Again,
what I'm saying is an example of the wrong fit for players. And Houston was the wrong fit. OKC was the wrong
fit.
Well,
I know that we're down two. Two teams have diagnosed.
But listen,
we got 28 other teams, and they just cut him out.
They should have never called him a cancer. They should never called him a cancer. And I don't think they ever will.
They treated him like
front offices
they cut
and
him
coaches
out.
Never take responsibility for what's going on with their team. Mm. And it's the wrong fit. I don't think D'Antoni and the organization is not going to say, you know what, we made a mistake and we didn't get it right here. They'll point out a player. He should not be the scapegoat for the Rockets' struggles right now. Nobody's shooting well. They're not playing defense. They're struggling as a team. Melo is not the bulk of that team. No, by no means. He should not be singled out right now.
No, that's messed up. You know the defense is taking a hit from being seventh ranked last year to what are they now, 24? And then you talk about losing a defensive-minded coach and on their coaching staff. You switch out Luke Bamute
and Trevor Ariza,
and then bring in Carmelo and say, you know what, we're going to run the same offense, same philosophy, except we're not the same team. I think that has to come back to coaching, like Dwayne Wade said.
Only one guy's getting cut.
It's the responsibility.
The other two got out of town.
One
guy's
getting
cut,
and they let him go in OKC. OKC, like, paid him 20-some-odd million just to go away. When they pay you $20 million just to go away, there's a problem. And then when your new team only costs them $2 million, they could keep you. It only costs you $2 million. And apparently they've decided – oh, we got to get rid of
it. And you're assessing the Houston Rockets and OKC Thunder as these championship franchises that got basketball right. Like, they make no mistakes.
Okay,
the same team that had James Harden, and all they had to do was
give
him $4 million, and he would still be in OKC, but they didn't even do that.
We'll do this, Marcellus.
Yes, sir.
Let's see who raises their hand to take Carmelo next. Let's see if Golden State, all it is $2 million. Let's see if the Lakers, let's see if Denver Nuggets.
I bet there will be somebody that takes
a contender that raises their hand to take Carmelo on.
Against all your hate that you're putting
that's
out
not
there
hate,
right
no,
now.
I'm just facting. I'm just facting. These are just facts.
A contender will step up to take Carmelo Anthony and find a coach with a scheme to be able to magnify his talents. I think somebody will pick up Carmelo
Anthony. You know who's going to pick him up? Mm. Three's Company. the Ball Hall, one of these big three teams. That's what
Ice Cube.
Ice Cube right now is in negotiations. Got 150,000, Carmelo. Come play in the big three.
You took one of the best scorers of all time, and you tried to put him in the role of great role players like Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute. That's unfair. He cannot do what they do. And they can't do what he does on a high level. So you can't compare those two and take the struggles because those guys are not there. No.
And Dante played for like four of those teams. So let me talk about Dante.
I ain't played for none of the ones you listed.
All right, welcome back with Lock and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Caron Butler.
Yes, sir.
Let's move to the Warriors, who were left scrambling after Kevin Durant and Draymond Green's dust-up earlier this week. The team clearly sided with Durant, suspending Draymond for last night's game against the Hawks. But reportedly, one Warriors player says, quote, there is no way Durant is coming back to Golden State once the season is over. After last night's game, Durant didn't exactly open up about the incident.
Have you and Draymond been able to hash anything out?
No.
Did he cross the line with anything last night that was said?
I'm going to keep that in house. That's what we do here. I mean, obviously, I know you guys got a job to do, but I'm not trying to get nobody no headlines. What happened, happened. We're trying to move on, just trying to play basketball.
Kevin, how would you sort of describe your friendship with Draymond? It seems like you guys have been friends for even before you became a Warrior. Is that fair to say?
I don't really think that even matters at this point right now. I mean, we just had a game. Anybody want to talk about the game?
Talk about the game.
Ask a question about the game.
All right, well, Durant's brother Tony added some fuel to the fire on today on Instagram, writing, quote, true colors ain't hard to see when someone is mad. It's so much more clear now. Listen, the question is Draymond worth the hassle? Because Draymond's a hassle. He's an irritant. And I think if somehow the Warriors decide that Kevin Durant staying here is dependent on Draymond Green exiting, Draymond Green's going to exit. Mm. I think the Warriors will decide they're better off without Draymond if it allows them to keep Durant.
Oh, so you're saying that one game suspension is a microcosm of how this can go, where we're going to support Durant in all efforts if we can.
Trying to keep him.
Yeah. Try to keep him and appease him. It's interesting. I look at this, so many layers to this. One, I was at the game.
Yep.
Man, I was on the other side of the court. I wish I would have switched my seats to hear this funk, because I would have reported every single word. This is interesting because Draymond Green is absolutely worth the hassle. He's always been worth the hassle. In a room full of gas, you need some fire. And this boy is fire. He's the passion. He's the stirrer. He's the one that's going to go test them. He's going to be the one that brings everyone out of their skin, out their comfort zones, but guess what? To a greater place. Have they won three of the last four championships? Yeah. Has Draymond been on that roster? Yeah. He's worth
it. Cost him a championship. He cost him a championship.
He cost him a championship.
With his immaturity and stuff.
And it's amazing. We always talk about the incidents, but not the results. So we're going to now have a timeline of issues with Draymond Green.
No, he cost him a championship.
But how many did he win? How many did he help him win?
He won three.
LeBron baited him.
He helped him get Durant to create this dynasty. So we're not going to give him proper credit, but we're going to go out there and give him the merits.
He's a strong part of the foundation in the fabric of the organization, why it turned around. The reason why it was a great carrot for Kevin Durant to come there. Mm-hmm. However, if you want to keep him there, you got to keep things on an even keel. And that right there was not cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And look, you have your moments in the heat of the battle. You exchange words. And having that confrontation is all about camaraderie and winning. And you move forward. To me personally, from the outside looking in, I just don't see that being a resolved situation because it wasn't answered correctly. And Kevin Durant, he said it. Look, we just want to focus on basketball moving forward, but it's just the energy of that situation just didn't seem right to me.
Let me add this, Marcellus. My take on this, I don't really have a problem with Draymond.
Right.
I really don't. What Draymond's issue, though, is Kevin Durant's softness. This guy is a little soft. And Draymond plays too rough. And y'all were big kids. You remember sometimes you playing with the other kids your same age, and mom would be like, boy, you too big for that. You play too rough for them kids.
My cousin Tyann, every time. Yeah. Like, stop.
I broke all my toys.
All of them, right.
And that's Draymond's issue. He plays too rough because, to me, when I look at this incident, I don't see anything there that I would be upset about 24 hours later. I don't care what Draymond called him in the locker room or what was said here in this little confrontation. I would be over it the next day. KD ain't built that way. Draymond plays a little too rough for KD.
Oh, don't you dare try to twist this.
I see where you're going with this. That ain't cool.
That ain't cool. Here's the real. All right, there's two levels to this. One, Draymond, you ain't as thorough as you are advertised. You ain't as 100 as you want to go out there and profess. You know why? Because I've never seen somebody who keeps it 100 thoroughly all the time, and then all of a sudden they explode. Because if you're thorough in all moments and all encounters, there's no pinned-up energy. There's no pinned-up emotion. There's no, now let me just unveil everything. When Draymond unloaded on Kevin Durant, I think Kevin Durant and his brother realized, oh, you're the guy that wants to be the bully on the block, but in reality, you're sitting there suppressing a lot of issues. Interesting. That's level one. Here's Kevin Durant's real issue with Draymond. It ain't because he's sensitive or soft. He's like, dude.
He's sensitive.
He could be, but not because of this.
Everybody is.
I can't trust you and respect you. I'm talking basketball. My trust is that you're going to take this basketball one-on-one and take it the right way. So that's one issue. We're on the bench. I just said, dude, pass me the ball. You know why I'm here, right? And Draymond bucks that and then wants to yell at him. And here's why I don't respect you. Because you have no boundaries when you're wrong. Jason, you and I could go at it all day. But if you're wrong, you better know where to stop. And if you my teammate, you can't stop. Oh, bruh, we got a real deep
issue. This is the only way, looking at the landscape of the association, the NBA, this is the only way that the Golden State Warriors can be beat. It has to be something
from inside.
Inside.
Implode.
It's the only way. And the perfect person is at the helm in Steve Kerr because he played with just about everything. He's seen just about everything. So he's going to be able to keep those personalities under control for the most part. But it's going to be interesting how it play out.
Marcellus, I'm going to push back, though. You're speaking the language of marriage. And to me, the language of man and woman and boundaries. In a locker room, in a competitive setting, boundaries get crossed all the damn time.
No, they don't. No, you
oh,
don't.
Oh, yeah, they
Whitlock,
do.
I've been in the locker room many times and then seen fights and been in corner and count. Guess what? You know what you don't do? You don't grab the chair. You don't grab the ketchup bottle. You don't grab the knife. You don't go at it. You know the boundaries. You're like, look, we're going to get at it, but tomorrow I need you.
Did Gilbert Arenas and these guys not bring guns to the locker room?
That's one altercation of 1,000 trillion.
Didn't nobody kill nobody.
Let's go ask Baylor basketball. I mean, look, and again, I'm not justifying or any of that, but I'm just saying.
I hear you.
I've seen things cross boundaries inside locker rooms, and they do.
And that's telling. When you go to that extent, oh, we got to blow this thing up.
Man, he called him a name. Big deal. That's 24 hours. When we won championships together, he helped recruit me there. I just can't let a little verbal conflict.
It ain't the name. It's the unloading. You've been wearing that for how many months and years, and now you're going to unload because I told you, pass me the ball? That's how close you're to the edge, and you missed the 100? Oh, bruh, you wearing some thinly veiled colors now. Now I can see you.
Please don't let that spill over.
All right, it's time for That Dude's Dudes. Sponsored by Captain Morgan. Drink responsibly. Captain's orders. All right, Greg Jennings and Bucky Brooks are back. Marcellus, what you got for That Dude's Dudes?
You know what I got. The unheralded. In the trenches. The ones who make it happen but don't get the highlights. Now we show them love on That Dude's Dudes. The big uglies. Let's go to my L.A. Chargers. Defensive end Melvin Ingram. I know you heard his name because he's supercharged out there. Finally, we get a spin move on That Dude's Dudes. You can see him unloading on Derek Carr. Take that L. And it's still rolling. Go, Corey. That's my dog right there as well. Now, let's show you. In the three technique, you usually don't see a guy standing up in linebacker position, looks like. Uh-oh, this is what's going to happen. So now you can see he's going to run a game, it looks like. Oh, but the game is getting punched. He's trying to make sure that he gets to the offensive tackles inside arm, but instead he realizes, oh, overplayed by the guard. Look at the footwork. Not the best footwork in a spin move. You want to open up the hips, but the best up top. Look at that arm play right there. You lock that arm, you lock that elbow, and now big dog. Hey, you know what you need to do? You need to help out on this play. Help me out, young lady.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for?
Yeah, y'all trying to tell me up there in Oakland, everybody loves Derek Carr. Uh-huh, he's just waiting there letting this quarterback get sacked. You know what happens? Melvin Ingram, That Dude's Dude, number three. Now let's get to number two. my man, Quentin Nelson. Everybody's seen this play, but everybody doesn't know why this play occurred. Ooh. Well, Indianapolis coach, pulling guard. Yeah. Barry Church, it's time to go to church. You might be horizontal in that church right there. Now, this is how it all happens. Barry Church is running down the play. Now, his eyes, look at the three levels, two offensive linemen and a running back. Barry Church has seen this 1,000 times. And now, as you can see, the containment is going to go wide. Instead of forcing this, he's going to go wide. Look at the footwork right there. Everything is saying, I'm making a business decision. I'm trying to get out of there. Barry Church gets the consequence of this. His eyes are on the right things. He is not expecting Quentin Nelson to turn this up. He's expecting him to go out. But Quentin Nelson said, you know what? Since y'all want to widen, I'm going upfield. And Barry Church, looking at that running back, does not see that monster truck coming for him right now. Look out. Help me out with this one.
I'm gonna lay my hands on. Barry Church is an old Mac boy. I think he played the
old Mac boy, Quentin Nelson. Stall him out. Number two, that dude of the week. And now let's go to number one. Probably our number one sacker in the game. Bears linebacker Khalil Mack. Return of the Mack. Yeah, because he's gonna be in this every single week. Look at him right there coming around the corner. Matt Stafford, take this. Now, standing up, linebacker position. Well, you're going against the tight end who wants to release, so I'm not mad at that. But look at this arm work right there. First, he grabs the wrist. So now you got him at your mercy. Once you have the wrist, you can control offensive lineman. Look at that. Ooh, the cleat's not even in the ground. On his heel.
Head down. And,
yeah, head down, looking like Jason Whitlock, Ball State. Look at that baby. Coach was saying, oh, you got to rock that baby to sleep. And this is a horrible position to be in right now. No power. Can't squat 5 pounds in that mummy position. So now you get caught up like this, and it is time to turn into the mummy. Khalil Mack. Got him by the wrist, got him opened up, and now it's time to do what Coach loves, dead bug him. He's dead bug right there. Step on the roach, get the Matt Stafford, and look at the beauty of this. Hey, Clay Matthews, you can sack a quarterback the right way. Look, the NFL safety rule already in effect. Khalil Mack, instead of running and sending a message, lays them down gently. Number one, that dude of the week, Khalil Mack.
All right, great job, Marcellus. Should have had Sheldon Day in from the 49ers and Warren Central High School.
True.
He'll be on the show later. All right, let's move to a guy who wasn't very dominant this week, Tom Brady, who struggled in New England's blowout loss to the Titans Sunday. Last year, Brady won the MVP at age 40, but at 41, he appears to be slowing down. And even Brady admits he, quote, wants to play better. When you look at the numbers, it's easy to understand why. With big drops in almost every category except interceptions, where he's already just one shy of his total from last year. All right. I don't want to make too much of it because when you're the MVP last year, it's hard to repeat, so of course there's going to be a drop-off in play. But with everybody's passing numbers skyrocketing, I think it's concerning that Brady's have taken this kind of dip this season. I think Father Time started to catch up with him.
Oh, it would be concerning if we didn't look beyond level one, layer one. But the devil's in the details. Was Julian Edelman there the first 4 weeks of the season? Yes or no?
Nope.
Gronkowski been injured again this year? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Happens every year.
for Gronkowski, not Edelman necessarily, his favorite target, favorite receiver. And then we're looking at some of these numbers by averages. It's amazing how it can get grossly exaggerated, his demise. We're talking about a 12-yard per game difference. All that means is let me see the Jets a couple more times, which I will, and light them up, which he will. And then that's, you know, he's going to be on par. But nothing's concerning to me. This is an offense just a few weeks ago we were applauding for scoring 38-plus points and winning effort. An offense that went through a shootout and won over your Kansas City Chiefs. So, to me, it's exaggerated if you say Father Time is caught up to him.
No, it's caught up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think we're reaching the end. I think we've seen it. Normally, when your quarterback gets older, you need more support around him. The New England Patriots don't have the same supporting cast around him to elevate his play. And Tom Brady's been great. Tom Brady go down as the GOAT and all those things. But Father Time is undefeated. Father Time is catching up with Tom. Mm. We're seeing the slippage in his game. We're seeing more errant throws from him in the pocket. We're seeing him see the ghost, take sacks when people aren't around. I think he knows it. I think he senses that he's losing his mojo, and that is okay. They still can win with him, but they're going to need the supporting cast to step up. But the numbers don't lie. His game is regressing.
I'm with you, Bucky. I think Father Time is catching up with him. I don't think they should be alarmed because, as you alluded to, this has been my point all week, once you get older, you understand I need more support. And that's okay. He's a smart quarterback, so you understand my physical abilities may be dwindling a bit, but up here, I still got that. So if you give me what I need, I can still be more than enough to get wins in the win column.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. We've got some good news. Now through November 26th, you can listen to our show on Fox Sports on SiriusXM Channel 83. This is free in your car, online, and on the SiriusXM app. Use the link in the podcast description and start your free trial today.
All right, welcome back to the show, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Matt Barnes. Let's move to the NBA, where Draymond Green is expected to return from his one-game suspension tonight. And will take the court alongside Kevin Durant for the first time since their altercation at the end of Monday's loss to the Clippers. Today, Draymond addressed the incident and tried to put the drama to rest.
You know, what happened a few nights ago, you know, Kevin and I spoke. We're moving forward. You know, I think there's no secret that I am an emotional player. You know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I play with that same emotion. You know, sometimes it gets the best of me, and, you know, it doesn't work to my favor. I'm going to live with that, you know, because it works in my favor to the good, as my resume speaks and this team resume speaks, more so than it doesn't. And so I'm never going to change who I am. I'm going to approach the game the same way that I always do. And, you know, like I said, we'll continue to move forward. You know, and I've read a lot about how, is this the end of the run, or is it over, or did I ruin it, or did I force Kevin to leave? You know, at the end of the day, as I've said before, whatever Kevin decided to do, whatever Clay decided to do, whatever who decides to do, you know, we had great years together, and I support everybody wholeheartedly, 100%, because as a man, as a human being, you got the right to do what you want to do with your life. And so I'll never question that. This only makes Kevin, myself, and the rest of my teammates stronger. That's what it's going to do. So, you know, you think you saw something before. Good luck with us now. Like, we're not going to crumble off of an argument. We're going to move forward. So that's all I got to say. Anybody want to talk about basketball? I'm here. If not, it's been real.
That is fascinating. Good. I got a lot of thoughts on that.
Right.
But I want to start with Matt, just because you were on this team. You know these guys. Do you think this feud is over?
It's over. And it should have been over already. I think the fact that it's them, that everyone's, you know, and then the media got their hands on it. But, you know, KD never really gave him anything to grab and run with. But more than anything, I mean, like I said, I've been in this locker room. What makes it special is the fact that there's no egos. I love the fact that KD wants the ball at the end of the game. He's the most efficient scorer we've ever seen. I know he had Clay on the right wing. He had someone cutting, someone on the right side. To me, it looked like Draymond was trying to draw the defense in and either kick to Clay or throw it back to KD, and a turnover happened. And then an argument happened. That happens a lot. And like I said, I think the fact that it's them, everyone's making a big deal about it.
You think the feud's over, Marcellus?
Yeah, I think it's over. I heard Mark Jackson talking about it yesterday. All it takes is one player to take ownership. Even if you're a tough guy, even if you just don't want to be that guy, even if you're Draymond, that's why they created the phrase, my bad, for the tough guys who don't want to say, I'm sorry, but you still get it out in the same way. And I look at this like, if you're Kevin Durant, I'm not a female dog, so that doesn't stick to me, that doesn't land. And I didn't give you, like Matt said, anything to run with. So this has to end right now, because these two guys are still trying to achieve something together as a collective. So, yeah, I think it's behind them.
I do believe the feud is over.
Okay.
But I also think, to me, when I listen to Draymond, I hear that group is also over, that this is
yes,
it.
I heard
we
that.
We are going, this year, we're going to go out, win this last championship, and then we're breaking up. The Jackson 5 is over. Mm-hmm. Michael's going to go sing on his own. Mm. Jermaine's going to do a solo career, perhaps.
One single, though.
Tell me if I'm dreaming. And so, I mean, that's what I heard is feud is over, but so is this relationship when this season's over. We're going to give our best this year. Watch out. We're going to be great. Yeah. We all know this is it. This is I forget the name of the Jacksons' last tour when they did their last all tour.
This is it? I don't know.
But that's what it sounds like to me, that this is it.
I wouldn't say that he's saying this is it. I think he's saying that he respects the fact that there's a lot of money out there. And people at the end of the day, like, they want money. You know, I know that KD is definitely capitalizing off the court in Golden State. I know Klay is doing a lot of stuff too. So if Golden State's owners want to go in the luxury tax tremendously and re-sign the team that they want to re-sign and give them the money they feel like they deserve, they can do it. But like they said, there's power of the money. There's some spots that look good for a couple guys. So it's going to come down to what they want to do at the end of the day.
Yeah, what I heard was a guy who realizes who he is and where he is. So when you get to that level of status, that stature, you're Draymond Green, you're a superstar in this game, guess what you have to do? You have to be proactive. You have to think ahead. You have to have foresight. And a lot of people are going to look at this moment if Kevin Durant goes out in free agency, says, that was the issue. That was the moment. And I think Draymond is like, let me control narrative, because you got to do that. You go upstairs right now at Fox, there's some people talking about the fall of 2020. You and I are just trying to get through Thursday, right? Like, you got to think way ahead when you got so much on the line. I think Draymond's just saying, in case, I'm letting y'all know this is not because of me.
You know, the thing that Draymond didn't hear him respond to today was, I wonder how he felt about the one-game suspension. I didn't like it. Unless there were punches thrown, why are you suspending a man over words? I don't get it. And that to me is the pampering of Kevin Durant and them trying to be all in on retaining Kevin Durant. But I also like your point, Matt, about money. And how much can four guys keep slicing up the money in Golden State? And so, and maybe in Draymond, it affects his pocketbook if all four of them stay together. And maybe, again, this goes down to Michael Jackson or whatever group. Eventually they figure out, you know, I can make more solo than I can. Ice Cube could make more solo than he could with N.W.A.
Yes, he could.
And maybe that's the decision. That's what, again, I felt like I heard is like, hey, man, it's about time to go out and start doing these solo tours again. There's more money to be made.
Like I said, it just depends. You know what I mean? It depends. All I know is this is a great group, and what makes them so special is their communication and their unity and the chemistry they have. That's why when you build all these teams and put all these players together, they never seem to match up with the Warriors, because the Warriors will beat them with chemistry. And I know that they're going to go above and beyond the Call of Duty now, just to prove that this is something that'll be swept on the rug. They're definitely going to bring them tighter, and we all know they're going to be a monster and they're going to be there at the end.
Yeah, I think it's poetic though that the chemistry was established before KD got there, and the chemistry could be the issue that gets them out, because Draymond didn't show that same mindset of the chemistry that got him this far. Like, calling him a B, I agree with a suspension. You know why? Look, I'm not going to go into physical to versus mental abuse, but I certainly know that if you call someone something, it triggers physical reactions, physical consequences. So that's why you got to say, we stay within this respectful box. That box could be wide, lots of latitude. You can say a lot of stuff about a lot of players in today's game, but there are boundaries, because if not, we go past that point, we going to get physical.
But Marcellus, I'm one of the old school idiots, I guess. And I would be a coach that occasionally, like, you know what? If they got to throw some hands to work this out, let them throw some hands. That's what they did in football. Sometimes we'd be in two-a-day practice or whatever. It's like, hey, man, we need a fight to get everybody, get it out of your system.
In
blah,
basketball,
blah, blah.
Too. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Steve Kerr. Like, we've heard this.
It's happened a lot. I mean, people fight. People get in arguments all the time. I mean, at the end of the day, they're brothers. You know what I mean? So, this is not, like I said, this is only blowing up because they're at the top and people want to try to find any kind of chink in their armor to be like, oh, that's the reason, or it's his fault. At the end of the day, they're going to, you know, stay healthy, run through this season, see if they win a championship. And then, you know, I think Draymond is saying, I respect whatever move you need to make after that. But he's not going to be the reason. This little argument here in November is not going to be the reason why he leaves in July, if he does.
I don't think it'll be the reason he leaves. But the more I talk this through and think about it, I believe the feud is over with for now, but the issues are still there.
Well, KD walked off and a lot of lip readers said, that's why I'm out, when he was on the court. Did you see that?
But a lot of things are said in the heat of passion, and he was in the heat of the passion right there, too. He was in the heat of the moment, so he's probably thinking, like, you know, F this, you know? But he's just saying it, just like if Draymond says something he should have said, he said it because he was in the heat of the moment, and that kind of stuff happens. There's no excuse for whatever, you know, name calling, whatever. It is what it is.
Matt, hold on.
But I think they're in the heat of the moment. You say a lot of things in the heat of the moment.
Drunk words are sober thoughts, right?
There you go.
And heated words are calm thoughts.
Somewhat.
No, look. When your girl says, I'm out, and then she walks it back, it's going to rear its ugly head at some point.
Keep in mind, though, if they do lose someone, that's going to open up money to keep Boogie.
Ah.
You know what I mean? So they're
going to reload this thing.
Yeah, to me, it was only a matter of time till the Lakers rebuild. I think that, you know, the Warriors are this new generation and how franchises are run and done. And if they happen to lose a couple stars here and there, people want to go play in Golden State because not only the team and the culture, but the off-the-court stuff in Silicon Valley and San Francisco and the tech push. Like, there's a lot more to basketball. Like, there's a lot more to being a Laker now. There's so much business off the court here. There's a lot of business off the court in the Bay. So, it's a destination now. So, if they happen to lose someone, personally, I'm a fan. I don't want to see them do it. But there's going to be people in the wings ready to resign.
Great point. Great job, Matt. Time to put on our thinking caps. We take a deeper look into the world of sports. All right, we're joined by two idiots, Clay Travis and Todd
Stars.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Todd Brockenridge just says stars, Jason. We're going to have to work with you a little bit
two
of time.
Two stars from Lock It In. I don't know how I didn't get Rachel Bonetta. I asked for Rachel Bonetta. Somehow I get stuck with Clay Travis and Todd Furman from Lock It In. You guys know I'm a journalist. Marcellus here, an Ivy League grad from Columbia. He thinks he's smarter than everybody else. Darnell, bring in Marcellus's cap.
Oh, huh?
Cap and gown. We got the gown.
Oh,
cap
appreciate
on.
You.
Clay, I know you went to Vanderbilt, the Ivy League of the South. Where'd you go? Wesleyan?
Wesleyan University. I share an alma mater with Bill Belichick. I like to think I'm much more personable. I'm never going to win any Super Bowls, but that's neither here nor there.
Patriot All way.
Right. Yeah, just do your job today, both of you. All right, let's move to the NFL, where this year's MVP race has turned into a tale of two quarterbacks, with young gun Patrick Mahomes and old man Drew Brees running away as favorites to win the award. While Mahomes is taking the league by storm and is having a historical year, Brees is once again having a Drew Brees-like year. And while the Saints quarterback has accomplished just about everything in his NFL career, he still never won the MVP award. And I got to thinking about this. I'm a huge Patrick Mahomes fan. I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Spent 16 years in Kansas City making my name. I think Patrick Mahomes is the MVP. He's having the best year. Yeah. But then I got to thinking about, Drew Brees is going to leave this earth or this career without being the MVP of the league? Yeah. I don't think the media and voters and people are going to let that happen. I think if Drew Brees keeps playing the way he is and Patrick Mahomes keeps playing the way he is, they're going to give the MVP award to Drew Brees as a lifetime achievement award. And part of me actually kind of agrees with it and thinks Mahomes will win it later and they need to give Drew Brees an MVP award.
No, you're not going to take the beauty of my sport away, which is this meritocracy, this merit-based world where we don't care what your story is. We don't care your likeness. We don't care your background. We don't care your size. We only care if you're putting your hand in here and you're saying, may the best man wins. That's what sports is built on. And it is not about story. It is not about you getting a lifetime achievement award if you're Drew Brees. Be a singer or an actor. Go get a Grammy or Oscar. They do that over there. In sports, when you get between the white lines, you got to go get this and earn this in the moment of truth. I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes, and he's just putting up better numbers. He's the Usain Bolt in this race. And I'm looking at Drew Brees like, you are killing it. You are amazing. But you're Tyson Gay. And for those who don't know who Tyson Gay is, he's a perennial second placer. And he is amazing. He has actually never set the world record, but has run world record times. But it just continues to skip over him because in the years where he's amazing, there's always someone better, and that's Patrick Mahomes.
Well, if you're going to talk to a perennial second placer, that's where Clay comes in. So he should get the chance to try and lead this dialogue, and then we can tell him why he's wrong like we do every day right after you guys
Here's
are out
the,
there.
I loved everything you said. You're completely wrong. Because Drew Brees is actually statistically better than Patrick Mahomes. Right now, Drew Brees is on pace to post the highest quarterback rating in the history of the NFL. The two guys who won it before him and set the records, MVPs. 77% completion percentage. What Drew Brees is doing on the field right now, it's rare we can say this. We've never seen it happen before. And I think the role that the Saints are on right now offensively is unlike anything we have seen in a very long time, too. I think Drew Brees, you don't even have to give him the Lifetime Achievement Award, although I do think it's crazy that at 39 he's never won it. First ballot NFL Hall of Famer. He is going to win it outright because his data and his stats all support the fact that he's not number two, much like me. He's number one.
Well, that's a great story, Clay, but if you look at the way the odds have moved, odds makers believe Patrick Mahomes, it's his award to lose at this juncture of the season, whether it's narrative, whether it's statistical performance, or what he's meant. Just look at how much more proficient this Chiefs offense has been with Mahomes under center than what it was with Alex Smith. Meanwhile, we look at Drew Brees. It's rinse and repeat. He continues to put up gaudy numbers, and while you're spot on, these are better numbers than we've seen any
that have
in his
ever
career,
existed in the history
that's
of
fine.
Football.
But Mahomes is poised to break all sorts of records, touchdown passes, yardage, you name it. He is on pace to put together maybe the single greatest season we could see from the quarterback position, and unlike this, well, he's going to have a chance to win it at some other point in his career. What happens if he goes out game three next year and something happens and he never gets there again? I think you have to reward him for his on-field performance this year. And while it's tough for Drew Brees, he's got a Super Bowl ring he'll be just fine with. Patrick Mahomes should be the MVP if we're talking about those two, because you won't even let me throw Todd Gurley into this discussion.
We're not going to talk about running back. I'm going to end it right here. You know what Patrick Mahomes does? He puts ketchup on his mac and cheese. I'm sorry.
What? What's
I'm sorry.
That?
You hear about that? Oh, yeah. No.
That's bad. You act like it's a bad thing.
That is unacceptable.
I put ketchup on my tacos. Let's go to war, baby.
I'm a ketchup guy. Yes. I don't like going overseas because they don't ever have enough ketchup on the table, right? I want ketchup everywhere. Can't put ketchup on the mac and cheese. Indefensible. That seals it.
I'm going to narrow the conversation a little bit more just about why I think narrative is going to win out for Drew Brees. And again, I think as this season goes on and he continues on this pace and people start just really focusing in on 39-year-old Drew Brees, Tom Brady's kind of falling off a slight bit, and Drew Brees being a better story. And when people start digging in, they're going to realize. And it took me a second. I thought about this earlier in the year. I was like, who is the modern-day Walter Payton? Who is the guy that everybody feels good about? If you gave Drew Brees the nickname Sweetness, people, oh, that kind of makes sense. The way he represents New Orleans, the way the unblemished character, you know, from the outside, and then who could, because I used to look at the patch that they have Walter Payton, and I thought about whose image could they put to as man of the year 30 years from now if they moved on from Walter Payton? I think it would be Drew Brees. And I think you got to give him this MVP just to build out his resume, because he is that guy. He's the modern day Walter Payton.
Well, the story sounds like, as I'm interpreting it, sounds like sustained excellence versus peak performance. Sounds like a Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant argument of some regard, because in a moment's time, Patrick Mahomes has supplanted OBJ as the most watched NFL player. Like, I'm fascinated with him. I'm a Chargers fan, former Charger player, and this Monday night, I am itching to see, because of the move to L.A., Patrick Mahomes once again. I already saw him play here in L.A. first week of the season. The guy is riveting. I think that's part of the sizzle that you have to respect. That's going to go a little farther than just, are you great for the brand? He's actually bringing viewers in droves in a different respect than even Drew Brees can because of that sustained effort.
How much better do Mahomes' numbers have to be for voters? Like, what does he have to do to distance himself? Because there's no doubt, if it's a coin flip and they can pick between those two, Drew Brees is going to get the nod if it's right. A dead heat. But does Mahomes have to throw for 15 more touchdown passes or break a handful more records for him to feel comfortable when the regular season comes to an end that he's put his best foot forward and deserves fair consideration to be the MVP?
I think he's going to need a better record. His team's going to need a better record. They're going to have to win more games than the Saints.
I think Whitlock is right about who votes here. It's writers. And what do writers do all day long, every day? We try to make sense of chaos and find a story that fits all of the factual evidence, right? And I think ultimately MVPs are about, you like the idea of meritocracy. I love that idea. I think ultimately they are the meritocracy that allows us to tell the best story. Because everybody wants to be able to write there on their typewriter, sit down on their laptops, and be able to craft a story about the season. Drew Brees at 39 posting the best year he's ever had statistically in his career, and also the best year that anybody's ever had statistically in the course of the NFL. That's a damn good lead. That's going to play well in the front page of the sports section. That's going to play well on the website. I think that's in the back of their mind what writers end up doing. They write the best story.
That story doesn't have enough contrast, because if you start to compare him in a relative scope to his own performances, there's not a great distance. I mean, even though this will be historical, you start to look at Drew Brees like, oh, didn't he have a 72% completion percentage before? Like, you start to measure him against himself, and I think that story starts to eat itself versus Patrick Mahomes. Are you kidding me?
That's the LeBron factor, right? LeBron should have been the MVP for a decade straight. Exactly. But he's not competing against the rest of the NBA. He's competing against himself. The difference, I would say, here is Brees has never won. If he'd won it when he was 29, I think people would say, ah, he got it. Let's go to the new guy instead. I think the storyline, Whitlock's right here. Ultimately, we want new, and we want Drew Brees
but
here.
I'll just say this. I can write a storyline for Patrick Mahomes that's very compelling.
Yes.
And I think as this, we got 6-7 weeks left in this regular season, I think people are going to get here eventually. Patrick Mahomes represents something unique and great as well. I realized that Cam Newton won the MVP.
Yeah.
But at no time, even when he won the MVP, I don't think people thought Cam Newton's the best quarterback in the NFL. Mm. They thought he was the MVP. This is the first time, I think, perhaps in the history of the NFL, there will be a black kid that everybody will point to, that's the best quarterback in the NFL. Mm. I think that's a really compelling story.
That's true.
Unless
Russell Wilson, you want to count him. If he had thrown that touchdown pass and it hadn't gotten picked off two straight Super Bowls, I think maybe Russell Wilson would have stepped into that arena. But I agree with you that in general, he's playing tonight.
Yeah.
I think Russell Wilson, probably the less of all of the top 10 quarterbacks, the least respected and talked about.
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at the defense he had. They got all the headlines in Seattle. Russell Wilson became an afterthought for what he had to do. Wilson's performances have been better the last couple of years as the Legion of Boom continues to decline, and it's a no-name defense where he's had to shoulder more of the responsibilities this year, notwithstanding with the ground game. But going back to the Lifetime Achievement Award, doesn't it create a compelling argument for journalists to go, this is the face of the game going forward? What better way than to anoint him, that guy, with an MVP award when he's earned it? And you go, Drew Brees, what you've done for the sport is great. There's no doubt everything he meant to the city of New Orleans and off field. But you can put him out to pasture. All of a sudden, we move the mantle from the Drew Brees, the Tom Brady's of the world. Patrick Mahomes, you're our guy, and we're now going to market you as the face of the NFL.
Hell of a story. Yeah. And you know what it'll be like? I'll go back to Walter Payton. When Walter Payton didn't score a touchdown in that damn Super Bowl, that was ridiculous. He deserved that,
yeah.
And Mike Ditka stole it from him. And he left without it. Maybe Drew Brees leaves without an MVP. Very quickly, on a gambling note, who would you bet on to win the MVP?
I think Drew Brees, because I think the story angle. But Furman may like Patrick Mahomes.
No,
he's a favorite.
I actually agree. I think from a value standpoint, where the number sits right now, Drew Brees makes more sense, because all of this stuff you do have to factor in. On-field performance is one thing. That narrative may be too hard for Mahomes to overcome, because if he has one game where he falters on a big stage, they're going to look for a reason to pull the chair out from under him, and I'll give the award to Drew Brees if they can.
All right, thank you, guys. Thank you. Great job on locking in.